Hello, campus cronies. Welcome back to Campus Crime Chronicles. I'm your host, Dr. Nicole Turner, higher education professional and true crime addict. In every episode of this podcast, I take a deep dive into some sort of true crime that occurred on a school campus or a crime that's associated with a college or university in some way. For each episode, I rate the seriousness of the crime from 1 to 5 on my serious crime scale, with 1 being completely not serious, possibly even a little humorous from time to time, to 5 being very serious. This episode is rated a 5, and it will shed light on just how dangerous firearms can be if they are placed into the hands of an irresponsible owner, even when they aren't used with intention to kill. In September of 2021, just days after he committed to the U.S. Army, Texas State University student Austin Salyer was fatally wounded by a bullet while he slept. The tragic incident occurred when the gun owner mishandled the weapon from an apartment next door, inadvertently discharging it through the wall. This episode is titled A Negligent Homicide. So without further ado, let's get started. Austin Michael Salyer was born nearly 2 months prematurely on December 21st, 2000, in Grapevine, Texas, to his parents Rodney and Bonnie Salyer. Weighing only 6 pounds, 4 ounces, Austin's parents said their one and only child quickly built up his strength and came home just 4 days later on Christmas Day. And that strength and determination would be the epitome of Austin's personality for the rest of his short 20 years of life. His father, Rodney, said, quote, "From there on out, he was always very strong. He was a strong kid," end quote. According to the reporting of Brianna Benitez for the University Star, Texas State's student newspaper, Austin spent his youth playing sports, including soccer and baseball. Although baseball was his true love in the sports world, he also began competing for his high school's clay target team, a new experience, yet one he excelled in. His parents said he soon became one of the school's top athletes in clay target shooting and competed at the state and national levels. When it came time to apply for college, Austin considered a handful of options, according to a piece in the Cross Timbers Gazette, but ultimately, he chose to go to college at Texas State University in San Marcos, Texas. Not only did the campus feel like home to him, but he also wanted to follow in his parents' footsteps. They attended and graduated from Southwest Texas State University in December of 1997, which was later renamed to Texas State University San Marcos in 2003, and finally just Texas State University in 2013. While at Texas State, Austin majored in criminal justice and minored in military science. He excelled in the classroom, earning a 4.0 GPA and a spot on the dean's list his last 2 semesters. Austin also joined the Theta Iota chapter of the Alpha Sigma Phi fraternity and served in Texas State's Army ROTC. Although he lived on campus in a dorm his freshman year, COVID struck and all students were required to leave campus for the remainder of the semester in spring of 2020. So Austin decided to become a permanent San Marcos resident and he moved off campus into his own place at the Linden Apartments. Austin was a well-liked, outgoing person who found a family with both his fraternity brothers and in ROTC. While his ultimate goal was to eventually become a police officer, he wanted to serve as an officer in the Army first upon graduation. According to the University Star, Austin always had an interest in joining the military, which is another aspect of his father's life that he looked up to and wanted to mirror. His father had joined the Army right out of high school, so Austin learned a lot about the U.S. military from his father, and he loved it. In June of 2021, just before starting his junior year of college, 20-year-old Austin was well on his way to making his military dreams come true. That's when he went to basic training camp at Fort Knox, Kentucky, where he spent nearly 30 days learning the inner and outer workings of the U.S. Army. Upon his return, Austin officially signed his commitment to the U.S. Army on September 9, 2021, where he would automatically be commissioned as an officer after graduating from college. Less than a week later, on the night of September 15, 2021, Austin was beyond ready for his first day of training with his new platoon. He was so excited that he went out and bought himself a new pair of army boots worth nearly $200. According to an article by Nicole Lopez for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, Austin had to wake up early the next day at 4:30 a.m. to go on a miles-long march bearing heavy equipment. So on September 15th, he headed to bed early as well, just before 9 p.m. Austin's mom, Bonnie, told Fox 7 News, quote, "Austin texted me at 8:53 p.m. and said, 'I'm going to bed. You know, good night, sweet dreams, I love you.' And I said, 'Okay, I love you too.' And then I waited about 3 minutes and I said, 'Keep making us proud.' And that was the last text I got from him," end quote. The next morning, knowing her son had to be up so early, Bonnie checked Austin's location on her phone at about 6 a.m., you know, wondering where he was with his platoon. But she was shocked when she realized his phone was still inside his apartment. Her first thought, however, was simply that he missed his alarm. Naturally, her mind didn't immediately think the worst. Bonnie said, quote, "I saw that his phone was still inside his apartment, and I thought, oh my gosh, he overslept. And so I started calling him. I started pinging him," end quote. When she didn't get a response, though, she began to worry. But then she thought that, perhaps, he was just in such a rush to leave that morning that maybe he forgot to take his phone with him. That's what she hoped for, anyway. She explained, quote, "I thought maybe he just was in a hurry. He left his phone. Which I knew in my heart that wasn't true, because nobody leaves their phone behind, right? It's become a part of our, literally part of our bodies. And so about 7:30, I kind of started to panic. Panic started to set in," end quote. According to a Newsweek article, Bonnie became incredibly worried after this, and when she had not heard from her one and only child by 11:15 a.m., she reached out to one of Austin's friends and asked the friend to stop by Austin's apartment to check on him. When the friend arrived to the fifth floor apartment, he found it swarming with fire crews and paramedics. A police officer later called Bonnie and broke the tragic news to her. Bonnie told Fox 7 News, quote, "He said, 'I'm sorry to tell you over the phone, but we found your son deceased in his apartment this morning,'" end quote. Upon finding Austin's lifeless body inside his apartment, San Marcos police were called to assist EMS and process the scene. According to KVUE, an ABC station in Austin, Texas, the Criminal Investigation Division found that Austin Salyer suffered a gunshot wound while he was sleeping. They quickly determined that his death resulted from a, quote, "firearm that was negligently discharged from a neighboring apartment," end quote. So, although we know what happened, the question is, how? How did such a thing happen the previous night that would cause such a tragic and unfortunate death? Well, according to an article in the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, Austin's neighbor turned himself in to police about an hour after they responded to the scene. The neighbor, 21-year-old Gabriel Nathaniel Brown, said he must have shot Austin by accident.
American Giant makes great clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, and more, right here in the U.S. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
According to a police report, Brown told investigators that he had just received a micro-conversion kit for his pistol, which is an extension for a handgun that's supposed to improve its accuracy and range, apparently. He said that he had just recently purchased the firearm and that he had never fired it before. That night, around midnight on September 16th, 2021, Brown was on FaceTime with his father and was showing off his pistol and conversion kit over the phone. While installing the conversion kit, Brown mishandled the weapon and a round went off, blasting a hole through the wall. Brown said, quote, "I put the conversion kit on and I guess one got stuck in the head because I never pulled the trigger, but it dislodged," end quote. And Brown even admitted to police that he was inexperienced with handling firearms. He said, quote, "I honestly don't know what happened because I am not very familiar with guns. I'm going to be completely honest with you. That was my first handgun purchase. Like I said, this is a complete accident," end quote. Brown went on to tell police that he saw the hole in the wall after the gun fired, and he tried to peer through it, but to him, it did not appear that the bullet had gone all the way through to the next apartment. Still, he said, he called Austin on Snapchat multiple times to be certain and to see if Austin was okay. When Austin didn't answer the phone, Brown walked outside and knocked on his door at around 2 a.m. But again, no answer. So, Brown said, he assumed that Austin just wasn't home. Not in a million years did he think the blast through the wall would have actually struck or harmed Austin. Plus, he said he didn't hear noises coming from the apartment either, and that's why Brown didn't call 911 or report the gunshot to police the night before when it actually happened. He said he had no idea that Austin was in the apartment or that he had been shot. Brown said he didn't realize what had actually happened and the gravity of the situation until later that day when EMS and police showed up to the complex and began swarming Austin's apartment. He said he went next door, went inside, and saw for himself that Austin had, in fact, been shot and killed, and he was responsible for it. At that point, Brown left Austin's apartment and called his father. He then placed the gun into his backpack and went to turn himself in to San Marcos police. Here's the thing. Although Brown turned himself in, he was not immediately arrested. In fact, he was allowed to go back home and continue on with his normal day-to-day life. And it would remain that way for the next 7 months. So, moving on with the timeline, Nicole Lopez reported for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram that a medical examiner noted the bullet hit his left arm and traveled through his chest and lungs all the way to his right arm. Austin's dad, Rodney, explained this further, saying, quote, "The bullet went through both of his lungs, breaking two ribs, and it lodged in his right arm. At that, obviously, you can imagine what that would be like waking up to that. So he managed to get out of bed. He got out of his bedroom into the hallway between his bedroom and his bathroom, and that's where he collapsed." End quote. While Brown's case was working its way through the justice system, Austin's parents and his many, many friends were left to grieve his death. Rodney heartbreakingly told the University Star, quote, "We've got our decades left to live without him. He was our only child, so it's just us. We don't have other children to turn to. We'll never see grandchildren. We don't have anybody to help care for us when we're older. We won't be able to do all the plans that we had with him, so it's something we're going to have to live with for many, many years with a lot of pain." End quote. According to an article in the University Star, Rodney and Bonnie Salyer spent nearly $2,000 to have their son's body transported from San Marcos to their hometown of Highland Village, which is a suburb in the Dallas-Fort Worth metro. But this was after they had to wait over a week until the autopsy was completed. So you can only imagine how hard the grieving process was for them. Rodney said, quote, "After he was transported, he was in what they call a holding casket. That's the casket he was in for the service. While he remained in that holding casket, still waiting for the judge to sign off so that we could then have the cremation, and so knowing your son is laying there, basically every minute seemed like an eternity," end quote. Apparently, the whole justice system in Hayes County was so backed up that Gabriel Brown's case didn't move forward until 7 months after Austin was killed. It wasn't until April 27, 2022, that the court case, the State of Texas versus Gabriel Brown, opened up and the grand jury was presented with two sentencing options: manslaughter or criminally negligent homicide. In Texas, manslaughter is considered a second-degree felony, which carries a prison sentence of 2 to 20 years and fines up to $10,000, according to several Texas-based law firm websites. Criminally negligent homicide, on the other hand, is tried as a state jail felony and carries a maximum sentence of 2 years in county jail and fines up to $10,000. In Gabriel Brown's case, the grand jury chose to indict him on the charge of criminally negligent homicide, which is defined as an intentional act that grossly deviates from reasonable standards of care, resulting in an unintentional killing of another person. Upon being indicted, Brown was arrested, but he posted a $3,000 bond and was released. According to the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, Brown entered an open plea, where the defense waives the right to a jury and pleads guilty. Sentencing, however, is determined by a judge in hopes of getting a better deal than the prosecution might offer. After learning that the maximum sentence Brown could face would only be 2 years behind bars, the Salyers were disappointed and angered, to say the least. Rodney said, quote, "A lot of people don't know or understand that it's very difficult because you're turning this over to other people's hands and you get to have no input. Yet Gabriel gets to be at the grand jury. He gets to speak on his behalf, but nobody gets to speak on Austin's behalf besides the prosecutor," end quote. After this, the Salyers' goal was to get as much time behind bars as possible for their son's justice. But that didn't exactly happen. On February 3, 2023, Brown was sentenced to a 2-year jail term. However, the sentence was probated by Hayes County District Court Judge Sherry Tribby, and Brown would serve 5 years on probation and only 180 days in county jail. So, less than a year behind bars. And the 180 days was to be served in increments of 18 days at a time, twice a year, over a span of 5 years. So essentially, he would report to jail 2 times a year for 18 days at a time, and he would do this for the next 5 years. But if you're thinking, that's incredibly lenient, just wait. Because less than a month after the sentencing hearing, Judge Tribby submitted a court docket entry amending the jail time. She cut it in half from 180 days to 90 days, leaving him to serve only 9 days twice a year. According to an article in the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, Brown is now reporting to jail each year, once for 9 days on the date of Austin's birthday, December 21st, and once for 9 more days on the date of the shooting, September 16th. And the reduced sentence changed without any explanation at all. Like, nobody to this day knows why it was changed or reduced. Rodney said, quote, "Over and over again, we've been failed. The whole thing has been so wrong that all we have left to fight for is the principle," end quote. A couple months later, on May 10th, 2023, the Salyers filed a wrongful death lawsuit in a Texas district court against Gabriel Brown, his father, Gregory Keith Brown, and his former girlfriend, Chantel Monique Vill, which alleges these individuals' involvement in the wrongful death of Austin. The lawsuit is seeking over $1 million in monetary relief and damages for funeral and burial expenses, pain and suffering experienced due to the death of the Salyers' only child, and the physical and mental pain Austin suffered before his death, all as a result of the negligent shooting. Now, I'll circle back around to why his father and girlfriend were included in the lawsuit, but the Salyers have openly said that they feel like they have been wronged and dismissed from the very beginning, from when Austin was first discovered deceased in his apartment. For starters, when police called Bonnie to give her the disturbing news, she and her husband were ready to pack up their things right then and make the 4-hour drive from their home in Dallas-Fort Worth to San Marcos. But a detective told Austin's parents not to come, at least not immediately. He said they wouldn't be allowed inside Austin's apartment, rather they could only stand in the parking lot and wait. Rodney said, quote, "That's one of our biggest regrets, that we didn't immediately go down there. We look back and we're like, how could he have told us not to come?" End quote. Then, when they learned that Brown had agreed to an open plea deal, the Salyers began coordinating with prosecuting attorney Catherine Schneider, who was later dismissed from the case, FYI, to discuss details and a time to meet and prepare for the sentencing. The Salyers said Schneider told them she could meet with them only a day before the sentencing hearing on January 6, 2023, which was later rescheduled for February. So then, when the Salyers requested to meet with more time in advance, you know, before the February hearing, Schneider responded to them in an email. In part, that email read, quote, "I know this is hard for you all, and I am not trying to minimize your loss, but rather explain where I'm coming from. And keep in mind that I do not work for you all and cannot legally give you my entire trial strategy for your approval or disapproval. We have given this case much more attention and time than an average case and will continue to do so. But you have to understand, there is not a lot that we can change." End quote. Rodney explained to the Star-Telegram how much of a gut punch that email felt like. He said, quote, "That was very insulting for us, that it didn't feel like it was being taken seriously. I mean, I get it. She's busy. She's got all this caseload and what have you, but we've lost our only child. We've lost our son. We're trying to get some sort of justice," end quote. After the judge reduced the jail portion of Brown's sentence from 180 to 90 days, Schneider told the Salyers in an email that it was not, quote, legally possible for the sentence to be changed without both parties present, end quote. Whatever that means, because obviously it happened. It was after this that Hayes County District Attorney Kelly Higgins took over the case from Schneider. The Salyers found themselves so shocked and confused about the random sentencing change with no explanation that they requested a hearing to try to keep the original 180-day sentence in place. Judge Tribby, however, denied the motion to review the punishment. When reporters for the Star-Telegram reached out to D.A. Higgins for an explanation, Higgins emailed saying, quote, "The court made periodic surrenders to the county jail a condition of probation. It is the terms of those surrenders that is in controversy. There were no other offenses to be charged in this case. It was a terrible accident resulting in the loss of a beloved and admired young man," end quote. Okay. Again, whatever that means, because that response literally provided no explanation. However, an email to the Salyers did provide a little more context. To them, Higgins wrote, quote, "From my view, there is nothing requiring review within the case itself. The only controversy, in my view, is the erroneous sentencing. There were mistakes made with the sentencing hearing, to be sure. In the end, the sentence is what the judge wanted it to be, despite the failure to pronounce it in open court," end quote. So, back to the lawsuit filed by the Salyers. If you remember, it implicates two other individuals, in addition to Gabriel Brown, as being partially responsible for Austin's wrongful death. The other two people listed as defendants in the suit are Brown's father, Gregory Keith Brown, and Gabriel Brown's girlfriend at the time, Chantel Monique Bill. Now, apparently, the apartment Brown was staying in that was next to Austin's was actually leased by Ville, not Brown, and so Ville was present the night of the shooting. Also, Brown was on the phone with his father when the shooting occurred. The lawsuit alleges, then, that Brown called his dad to, quote, "show off his semi-automatic pistol and the micro-conversion kit," end quote. While on the call, Brown fired his pistol while installing the conversion kit, which caused a bullet to blast through the wall and hit Austin at a close range. The lawsuit states, quote, "Austin managed to get himself up out of bed. In what must have been like a terrifying and horrific nightmare, Austin stumbled around his bedroom, injured and bleeding profusely. Austin Salyer managed to exit his bedroom into the kitchen and living room area of his apartment and finally collapsed on the ground where he succumbed to his injuries. Austin was not discovered until late morning of September 16, 2021," end quote. So, the lawsuit alleges that despite knowing Austin lived next door and that a bullet had literally blasted through the shared wall, Gabriel Brown, quote, "callously failed to call police, apartment management, 911, or any other emergency service provider to report the discharge or to ask anyone to check on his neighbor," end quote. The same thing goes for Ville, who was present during the shooting, and for Gregory Brown, who was on the phone with Gabriel and fully aware of the situation. The lawsuit further states, quote, "each of the defendants cruelly disregarded the massive danger they inflicted on Austin Salyer, and as a result of being shot at close range by defendant Gabriel Brown, 20-year-old Austin Salyer died by homicide," end quote. The lawsuit goes on to say, quote, "despite literally killing another human being with a gun and failing to tell any authority about it until well after any chance of saving the life of Austin Salyer remained, defendant Gabriel Nathaniel Brown received a slap on the wrist from elected officials in Hayes County," end quote. This lawsuit, as I previously said, was filed about 10 months ago now in May 2023, so nothing has been updated yet on the status of the case. However, according to court documents, Gabriel and Gregory Brown, as well as Ville, all denied the allegations and are representing themselves. So for as much pushback and lack of support the Salyers feel they've received from Hayes County, the same is not true of the university itself. While Texas State University police were not involved in the actual case, TSU has been nothing but supportive and understanding of the tragedy the Salyers have been through. As a college or institution of higher education, there is a fine balance between supporting students and families while also adhering to laws and policies. Sometimes colleges and universities get it right and manage that balance with compassion, and sometimes they miss the mark. But I'd like to take some time to give kudos to TSU and the campus police. Matt Carmichael, the TSU chief of police, said, quote, "While it may have been the 50th time I'm working with a survivor, it better feel like the first time for that family or those members. I think that's where we can sometimes lose sight, and quite honestly, it can be that we're not providing a level of service because we're disconnected," end quote. Carmichael also has been a huge advocate for the Salyers as they've navigated their worst living nightmare. He said he believes victim advocacy is an area that the justice system and police need to work on the most. He said, quote, "When a case is adjudicated, that family still needs advocacy. We can do better," end quote. Now, in 2024, the Salyers are left pursuing legislation. Not only have they met with a senator to discuss their concerns, but they've also met with another district attorney and are working to push for legislation that reworks gun laws in the state of Texas. Rodney Salyer said, quote, "That's our next goal, is to try and work with some folks and see what we can do to fix some of these problems," end quote. Speaking of gun laws, according to an editorial written by the editorial board for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram newspaper, there are more gun owners in Texas than any other state in the union. Yet, Texas possesses some of the least restrictive laws regarding these weapons. The state legislature has removed licensing requirements, which has made it super easy for someone to legally carry a firearm without any kind of knowledge or training. So, the editorial argues that Texas needs more policies and actions that communicate just how serious the misuse of guns is, even when it's accidental. And those who are not familiar with guns or who have not received the proper training should not be so cavalier about handling them. The editorial goes on to say that some states, such as Florida, are much tougher on gun-related crimes. And the maximum sentence for negligent homicide in Florida is 15 years in prison. The article states, quote, "It makes Texas look soft on gun crime," end quote. And I couldn't agree more. Now, y'all know me by now, and as a journalist by nature, I'm not one to get on a soapbox or really express my opinion on here. But y'all, it's my podcast and I can do what I want. Especially when I feel passionately about something, and gun legislation just so happens to be one of those things I feel passionately about. Am I against owning a gun? Absolutely not. I mean, owning a firearm of any kind is a constitutional right. But we must do better as a union for the sake of humanity. I mean, if we are required to have X amount of hours of training before we can drive a car and get a license, or if we have to maintain a certain credit score or income to buy a home, why can't we be stricter about who can and can't have a gun, a device that can literally take somebody's life in the blink of an eye? So I agree with the editorial in the Star-Telegram. We must implement some type of required training, plus background checks, before anyone can legally purchase a firearm. That's my story, y'all, and I'm sticking to it. But I will step back down off of my soapbox now. Okay, so before I wrap up this episode, I'd like to tell you a little bit more about Austin Salyer and just how much he meant to his loved ones. He was not only somebody's son, he was a grandson, a nephew, a cousin, a friend, and a soldier. You see, Austin made good friends in whatever he did and wherever he went, which was a natural side effect from being an only child with no siblings. He was intentional about forming connections and friendships. Reagan Chester, a TSU student who met Austin through ROTC, said, quote, "Talking to Austin makes you feel special because he really focuses on what you say. He doesn't get distracted. He wants you to know that he's there to talk to you, to listen, to respond to you," end quote. One of Austin's best friends and fraternity brothers, Cade Trahan, said he could tell Austin was a great person by how many people were simply drawn to him. People wanted to be his friend. He said, quote, "I really never been around someone like that. Like the way that he was just someone that captured the attention of people. Someone that was just so positive and caring. Austin just was so charismatic. People just looked at him and knew that he was a natural leader. He had nothing but love in his heart. He was just the best guy ever, end quote. And while Rodney and Bonnie Salyer miss their son every single day, and although processing their son's death has been the most challenging experience of their lives, Bonnie said telling Austin's story and hearing how much he impacted others has been therapeutic and cathartic for both her and Rodney. And Rodney Salyer added, quote, "He was our only child and we put everything into him. He was the best of us together. He was just better, better than us," end quote. Okay, y'all, that officially brings us to the end of Chronicle 74. As always, be sure to check out my social media where I post photos associated with each case and episode. You can find me at Campus Crime Chronicles on both Facebook and Instagram. And just to be completely transparent, the next new episode of Campus Crime Chronicles won't drop until the week after next, on Monday, April 1st. That's because next week is my spring break, and I just happen to be going out of town to present my doctoral research at a conference. So doing all of that and putting out a new episode just wasn't feasible for this one-woman band. Don't worry, though. If you can't get enough of Campus Crime Chronicles and you are dying for a new episode, no pun intended, then be sure to check out my Patreon for some all-new campus crime stories. Okay, well, that's all for today, so bye for now. Campus Crime Chronicles is researched, written, and recorded by me, Nicole Turner, and it's edited and produced by Giari Gassaway. Tune in again in 2 weeks for Chronicle 75.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.